34. An unexpected letter arrived, from Teddy, in Paris. It was hardly to be believed. She wrote that she was coming, very soon, next week. My heart began to beat like a drum. She was coming to try to get her mother out of the country, she wrote, and she wanted to see how things were close up. She was a little anxious, but she was looking forward to many things, and she hoped to see a lot of me. As I put the letter in my inside pocket, I had a feeling as if life were returning, an overwhelming tingling as though ants were crawling all over me. I suddenly realized that all the while I had been stiff, numb, and cold, almost dead. I ran around the flat, whistled, and smoked one cigarette after another. I did not know what to do with myself. In my present condition, it was almost unbearable to feel such pleasure in anticipation. The next day, the headlines were, "Training Camps for Referendars." All referendars who were about to take their assessor examinations and had finished their preparatory tests would be required to go to training camps, where they would take part in military and sporting exercises and ideological indoctrination sessions to prepare them for their great task as German people's judges. The first batch would receive their call-up papers in the next few days. There followed an editorial comment full of praise and heil. "Every young German lawyer will be grateful to the Minister of Justice." That was the first time, I think, that I threw a real temper tantrum. The cause may seem rather slight, but the reactions of us frail and weak human beings are not always strictly commensurate with the general importance of the occasion. I beat the walls with my fists as though I had been locked up. I screamed and sobbed and cursed God and the world, my father, myself, the German Reich, the newspaper, everyone and everything. I was about to hand in my last preparatory homework test, and so could reckon on being part of the first contingent. I saw red and went berserk. Then I collapsed and wrote a short, despairing letter to Teddy. She should come as quickly as possible so that we could see each other at least for a day or two. The next day, or the day after that, I dutifully submitted my final homework test, with a broken feeling of having had a thorough drubbing. Then, praise be to Prussian red tape, nothing happened. My tests were probably gathering dust in some office. First, they must be processed there. Then my name had to be ticked off on some list and transferred to some other list. Then the contingents for the camps had to be assembled, the call-up papers printed and sent off, and, marvellously, each of these stages took a few precious days. When some days had passed without any reaction, I calmed down and remembered the way that Prussian departments work. I saw that there was some hope. Indeed, I could hope for 2, maybe even 4 weeks of freedom. True, any day could see an end to it, but it was not inevitable. Every day I checked the post for official letters, at first anxiously and with relief, then with quiet confidence, and finally, as it became more critical, with an ever more confident, sacrilegious certainty that there would not be one. It could have arrived any day, but it did not. Teddy arrived instead. She came, and it was as if she had never been away. She brought a whiff of Paris with her, Parisian cigarettes, Parisian magazines, Parisian gossip, and, irresistible as a perfume, the air of Paris, air that could be breathed, and I breathed it greedily. In Paris, the fashion that summer, the summer in which uniforms had become so horribly fashionable in Germany, was for women to dress à l'uniforme. Thus Teddy wore a little blue lancer's jacket with insets and brass buttons. It was unimaginable. She came from a world where the women wore that kind of thing for fun, and nobody thought anything of it. She had many stories. Parisian students of all nationalities had just been on a 6-week trip through France. There had been Swedes, Hungarians, Poles, Austrians, Germans, and Italians. They had danced the folk dances of their countries in their national costumes, and sung folk songs. Everywhere they had been received like princes, with cries of bravo and bis and fraternal speeches. In Lyon, Herriot, a French politician, variously foreign minister and prime minister in the 1920s, Herriot himself had delivered a speech that had almost had them all in tears, and then the city had given them such a meal that they had all felt overfed for 2 days. I sat there and just let her tell me everything, eagerly asking for more. Such things still existed? Yes, they existed, less than a day's journey away. and Teddy was here sitting next to me, really next to me, on my chair, telling me all this as though it were nothing out of the ordinary. This time I had nothing to show her in exchange, absolutely nothing. Before, when she had come, there had still been a few things worth seeing in Berlin. An interesting film that was the talk of the town, a few major concerts, a cabaret or small theatre with a special atmosphere. This time there was nothing of the kind. You could almost see Teddy gasping for air. Innocently she asked about cafes and cabarets that had long since been closed, asked about actors who had not appeared for many months. Of course she had read the news in the press, but now the reality, seen face to face, was rather different, less sensational perhaps, but much harder to comprehend and much harder to endure. The swastika flags everywhere, the brown uniforms that one could not get away from, not in buses, cafes, or in the streets, or even in the Tiergarten Park. They were everywhere, like an army of occupation, the never-ending march music and drums. Strange. Teddy still noticed it, and asked what the reason was. She did not know yet that there would have been more reason to ask if there had been no music. The red posters with the announcements of executions on the poster pillars almost every morning, next to the cinema programs, and the posters for summer restaurants. I did not even notice them any more, but Teddy shuddered as she studied them innocently. On one walk I suddenly pulled her into a house entrance. She did not understand, and asked with a start, "What's up?" "There's an SA flag passing our way," I said, as though it were completely obvious. "So what? You don't want to salute it, do you?" "No. Why? You have to if they pass by and you're on the street." "What do you mean, have to? You just don't do it." Poor Teddy. She really did come from another world. I did not answer, but just pulled a long face. "I'm a foreigner," said Teddy. "Nobody can force me." Again I could only smile ruefully at her illusions. She was an Austrian.